The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Boy, oh boy, is the time flying by. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show for hour number three here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Thanks so much for joining us on today's jam-packed, action-packed show. Congressman Ken Buck joining us at the bottom of the hour on the debt ceiling debacle in Washington, D.C. So last weekend, during the 7 o'clock hour in particular, I spent a lot of time talking about executive sessions in Denver public schools and how they have been going behind closed doors, using a state statute in ways that are at a minimum suspect, and in some cases, certainly from March 23rd of this year, illegal. Because the state statute sets forth the specific reasons that you are allowed to go into executive session. And in one instance, on March 23rd, the day after the tragic shooting at East High School that entailed two administrators being shot by a student, thankfully they have both survived. The day after, school board met behind closed doors for 5 hours, and the DPS board came out with a memorandum, and that memorandum entailed a policy change on school resource officers and more. Here's a little tidbit per Tay Anderson, vice president of the board.
Based on the emergency situation presented by the events of March 22nd, 2023, the Board of Education will hereby suspend Policy EL-1010 through June 30th, 2023, and direct Superintendent Alex Marrero to develop a systemic long-term safety operational plan in consideration of EL-11 and in accordance with Safety Ends Policy 4.
So that came out of a five-hour closed-door session. Well, then the board came back out, and in 33 seconds, they passed that measure.
So at this point, again, we are open for debate or additional commentary, so we'll give everyone a few moments.
She's asking for additional debate or thoughts, commentary?
Seeing none, I'm going to ask Ms. Atwood, would you please call the roll?
And then they all vote yes. Asked to call the roll. There was no discussion. So was that legal? The March 23rd session. Well, six media outlets have now sued Denver Public Schools, saying release the executive session audio because that session was illegal. And there are a couple of reasons why, according to the attorneys for these six outlets, which includes Colorado Politics and the Denver Gazette together as one of the entities. And I write for Colorado Politics and the Denver Gazette. And they have a couple of attorneys who are pursuing this lawsuit on their behalf against DPS, trying to get the recording of this session. One of them is the president of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, First Amendment attorney Steve Zansberg, who is an expert on issues of transparency in Colorado sunshine laws, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to the program now. Steve, good morning. Welcome.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you on. I appreciate the time. So tell us about this lawsuit. And we just heard there they did a reading. They came out of the so-called executive session for 5 hours. They read what they came up with, and then they voted in all of 33 seconds without having any discussion. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, yes, as you accurately described, two of the organizations, news organizations you work for, and four others, have retained me and Rachel Johnson, who is a pro bono attorney for the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, and we filed suit yesterday challenging the actions of the Board of Education on March 23rd. And, you know, coming out of the closed-door meeting of 5 hours and adopting a you know, 180-degree change in school policy, officially suspending the prior board policy that precludes or prohibits the placement of armed law enforcement in the high schools without any public discussion. That's one rather flagrant and, I would argue, open and shut, black and white violation. Decisions of that sort can't be made behind closed doors, and it wasn't even rubber stamped with any type of peripheral or you know, cover CYA discussion. It just went straight to vote. Here's a memo we just drafted, and now shall we vote for it? And they did. The other violation was that it really actually wasn't even an executive session. Colorado law makes clear that in order to convene an executive session, a public body has to cite the statutory provision that authorizes it, state what the statute says, and then to announce publicly a particular matter that is going to be discussed behind closed doors so the public knows what the general nature. And all they said prior publicly before convening that five-hour closed-door session was, in light of events yesterday at East High School on March 22nd, we're going to discuss A, B, C, and D, four matters that the statute authorizes. But they didn't announce that they were going to discuss considering, you know, reversing school policy or information that Director Anderson had received about the mayor possibly getting involved in the situation and placing a police officer. I mean, no detail whatsoever about what was going to be discussed. And that renders the entire meeting not an executive session, but in fact, an unlawfully closed public meeting. And the recording of it is a public record.
So to be clear, Steve Zansberg, you're saying that while you have the big component of you're not supposed to shape policy behind closed doors and then come out and vote without any public discussion, et cetera, beyond just that, they didn't even meet the basic foundational requirements for how to go an executive session and what qualifies for executive session under state statute.
Yes, that's correct. And there are three Court of Appeals decisions that hold that if a public body, and because of the text of the statute, by the way, it says prior to convening a public, an executive session, the exception to the general rule under the open meetings law that the formation of public policy must be conducted in public, but there are these narrow exceptions that are authorized to be discussed outside of public observation. But in order to do so, they must strictly comply, that's what the Court of Appeals has said, with the procedural but statutory requirements of publicly announcing in a public meeting the basis, the legal basis for the discussion, and the particular matter to be discussed in as much detail as possible without compromising the purpose for which the session is authorized, and then vote upon that formal motion to go into executive session. And if a public body doesn't do that, then it hasn't conducted an executive session at all. It's unlawfully engaged in discussion of public business outside of public view. And that's what happened here. And for that reason, the judge doesn't even have to review the tape to determine whether or not they reached a decision behind closed doors, which we can't imagine how it could have occurred otherwise. Mm-hmm. They came out and agreed to this memo without any public discussion of it whatsoever. But in any case, the judge wouldn't have to listen to 5 hours of discussion to determine how much of it led up to this decision. He could just rule, and we've asked the court to do so, that the entire meeting was an unlawfully closed public meeting, and then the recording of it must be released under the Public Records Act.
Is there any reason, Attorney Steve Zansberg, that the school board couldn't just say, you know what, in the interest of transparency, given the controversy, given the significance of the determinations that we made, we're going to release the recording and we're not going to need a judge to do so. We're not going to cost any money for anybody, et cetera. Is there any reason they couldn't do that?
There is absolutely no reason they couldn't do that. Director Tay Anderson posted on Twitter urging his colleagues to do that.
Yeah.
They have discretion. I have also publicly stated to anyone who asks that I urge the school board to exercise its discretion, spare the taxpayers the cost of litigating a case they're going to lose, and simply release the recording. And that would moot the case and spare the taxpayers of this school district significant sum.
And to be clear, I recall that that tweet from Tay Anderson, and it was so that he could prove that he was not lying or something relative to the mayor of Denver and the controversy there. It didn't really have to do with transparency so much as let me prove that what I said was accurate, which is interesting. But nevertheless, he still did call for releasing it, which absolutely they should do. I have a clip here of last week when they were trying to go an executive session, Tay Anderson, Scott Esserman, and Michelle Quattlebaum, and the other four school board members, Dr. Carrie Olson, school board president, Xochitl Gaitan, Charmaine Lindsay, and Scott Balderman, all voted no, so they didn't go into executive sessions. But Tay Anderson and Scott Esserman defended their past executive sessions. I want to play a clip combining the two of these and get your reaction here to what they had
to
say.
For those who don't want to go into executive session, are we admitting that we've done something wrong in executive session, that we should be that we should be cautioning?
I'm just asking
because it seems that we're cautioning against trying to go into executive session as if we have admitted that we have done something wrong or we've used executive session improperly in the past, which
careful
I don't
now,
believe.
Vice President Anderson. No one is saying that.
I'm speaking. I'm just asking because I'm curious because of the way that this is being framed. If I was watching this, I would say, is there something that happened in an executive session that shouldn't have happened? Is the reason why folks are not wanting to go into executive session?
Allusions that have been cast that there have been untoward or inappropriate actions in executive sessions, I'd like to counter that narrative now, clearly and completely. There is a reason that these are allowed for us as a tool in statute, and I don't think we can be afraid of using them for their intended purpose.
And in that vein, a statement unsigned from the school board said, quote, due to the nature of an executive session, we cannot disclose what was discussed. However, the Board of Education is confident that it has conducted all meetings in accordance with applicable laws. With that statement in mind and what Anderson and Esserman said in that clip I just played, what say you, Attorney Steve Zansberg?
Well, they've made clear that they can speak in public about what transpired. And I call upon the board at the next public meeting or special meeting, they have our lawsuit now, to explain how they believe they complied with the law in failing to announce any particular matter they were going to discuss before voting to go into a five-hour closed-door meeting, and how they came out of that closed-door meeting and voted to approve a memo changing school policy, district policy, without any public discussion. They can certainly discuss and answer those two questions without violating any confidentiality or privilege. They have the right to release the recording in its entirety right now. And unless they can explain to the public, not in a court of law, but in the court of public opinion, why they believe, it's one thing to say, we believe we've complied. Well, explain how you believe you've complied. And if you can't do so, then spare the taxpayers of this school district the money of losing in court.
Yeah, I don't think that you could find a more clear-cut case for a failure to follow the law here on open meetings rules more than this. Like, this is pretty cut and dry, I think, as you have said, and I would agree. Again, we're talking with Steve Zansberg. He's president of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, their website, ColoradoFOIC.org, and is one of two attorneys that is representing six different media outlets in a lawsuit against Denver Public Schools, seeking to have the March 23rd executive session presented to the public. I do want to just ask you about something. We talked briefly about this part last night. There was an executive session back on December 15th, and I had written about this, and I talked about it again last week, expressing concerns about them following the law. This is how that executive session came about, and it ends here in this clip I want to play with Scott Balderman saying why he's voting no. Take a listen here.
May I have a motion to move into executive session?
So moved.
May I get a second?
Second.
And so we'll go ahead and open that for a discussion. We'll start with Director Esterman.
I had said about the email expressing the need for executive session, and I thought this was a good executive session to meet those needs.
Meet the needs of an email we don't know about, to be clear.
Any further discussion or commentary, questions? Vice President Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm going to support moving into executive session for other purposes of us to be able to discuss legal matters with our attorney on ongoing legal proceedings, and also the ability for us to talk about personnel matters.
Any other questions, Director Baldwin?
I want to say that I have no idea what is going to be discussed in executive session, so I feel uncomfortable voting to support this, so I'll be voting no. I just don't know what the topic.
I'm voting no because I don't know what the topic is and what we're going to be discussing. And then they ended up Steve Zansberg behind closed doors from 7:30 to 11:30 at night, a 4-hour meeting. Just kind of with a little bit of what you heard there, what do you think? I mean, is this something that maybe there are other instances where they're not adequately following the law on sunshine, that is to say when they're using executive sessions?
Yeah, I mean, that's a clear case. If one of the members of the board announces publicly that he has no idea what is going to be discussed behind closed doors, then certainly the public doesn't either. And that's the point. And, you know, this lawsuit is very focused on this one egregious example.
Right. March 23rd.
And particularly because of March 23rd, because it was a 5-hour closed door meeting and they came out and reversed district policy. And you know, called for the placement of armed patrol police officers, SROs, in every high school in the district. It's of significant import. But, you know, I have heard, I haven't done any sort of survey, that it was not an unusual occurrence that there was a closed-door meeting like the one you just played of some significant length without informing the public what at all they were going behind closed doors to discuss, and that's what the law prohibits.
Yeah, if you're going to say we need to go to an executive session behind closed doors for reasons I stated in an email, and by the way, I put in an open records request, and they gave me a privilege log that said, "Nope, you can't access these emails," because I wanted to see what the email was, and I couldn't even get access to that, Steve Zansberg. So it's just all these red flags. And then when you have a case like the March 23rd instance that's so cut and dry, I mean, that's not good government, for starters.
I agree. And once again, I call upon the school board to do the right thing, spare the taxpayers the cost of litigating a case they cannot win, and to simply exercise discretion and moot the case by releasing the recording.
Real quick, how does a case like this progress? What might the timeline look like, Steve Zansberg?
Well, because it's under the Open Records Act, a judge is to set an order to show cause why the record that was requested by these six news organizations was not released to them at the earliest practical time, which means with all due haste. And in civil courts of law, that means a matter of weeks, not months or years. And I know that's never fast enough for news organizations, but it's about as fast as things can go in our civil justice system.
Well, I appreciate you with the work that you're doing here. Best of luck in this case, although I don't think you really need it too much. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Steve Zansberg.
My pleasure.
Again, Steve Zansberg is president of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, joining us right here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show in regards to this lawsuit. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Congressman Ken Buck joining us on the other side here on Denver's Local Talk Leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Gotta love Buddy Guy, a man of many words. I think I'm a man of many words. I write a lot, and I do a lot of radio, including Tuesday. I will be filling in for George Brockler from 6 to 10. That's this Tuesday morning, May 2nd. Tune in then. Last call of the day goes to Stephen in Denver. Good morning, Stephen. How the heck are you? Welcome to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show.
Great. Love your show.
This is an original thought that I developed walking my dog past this school that had a huge sign and said, celebrate diversity. And that's a very noble idea. I understand what they're trying to do. But I started thinking about this. All of the subjects they teach in school, math dynamics of mathematics, are the same for an African as they are an Eskimo. The biology and chemistry of life works the same for Russians as it does for someone from South America. Sociology, I mean, no white, black, blue, brown person loves their family anymore. The dynamics are the same. So I say, instead of celebrating diversity, which is differences, let's celebrate inclusivity. Let's promote inclusivity so that when you look over at that kid that's different color than you or has a different way of speaking, celebrate the inclusiveness and the commonness that we all share.
So let me say, there is a term, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That whole set of terms is tossed out. That they go together. So the idea is having inclusivity for certain groups and so forth. I mean, you know, here's the thing. I agree with the unity. What are the things that we have in common? It's also appropriate to celebrate differences as long as you're looking at the various differences, and they can be instructive in showing we may have differences, but we have commonalities. And real quick, Steve, because we got Congressman Ken Buck calling in, I think we need to have both so people can understand we may be different, but we got all these things in common.
Yeah, we're only different, though, in the color and in the way you speak. Inclusivity trumps.
Well, no. Diversity should and does include opinions, views. And if you include and expand diversity in that way, I think that's valuable, which is what Douglas County Schools is doing. I'm afraid we got to run, Stephen. Great call. I really appreciate the point. Very important one. But we do have here now on the VIP line the congressman for the 4th Congressional District, Ken Buck, returns to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Good morning, sir. How the heck are you?
I am great, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, although, of course, we look at Washington, D.C., and we continue to see craziness, including fiscal insanity and also this idea that we are on the verge of default and all hell is going to break loose. And I saw that during the week, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on a Republican package dealing with the debt ceiling and also cutting projected spending. And you were one of four Republicans to vote no on that proposal. Let's get right to it, Congressman Ken Buck. Why did you vote no?
Real simple, Jimmy. The Biden numbers, the Biden projected budget in 10 years will create 58 or have our national debt at $58 trillion. The Republican version of that gets our national debt to $53 trillion. That is not a budget, a projection that I can accept. We have not had a single hearing in the Congress in the first 4 months to look at wasteful programs and start looking at how to cut those programs. Not a single hearing. We have not passed a budget. Most budgets are passed in late February, early March. We haven't passed a budget to allow the appropriators to set the number for future appropriations. We are not serious about cutting the budget, and I am not going to vote for a bill. It obviously doesn't have any chance in the Senate or getting signed by the president. I'm not going to vote for a bill so that some people can go out and argue that we're saving $4.5 trillion when the reality is that we're spending $53 trillion.
So I certainly perfectly agree with you on the fiscal situation, and I think you laid everything out very well, Congressman Ken Buck. However, when you do have the point that you just raised, that is, this isn't even going to pass the Senate. Biden isn't going to sign this into law. So if that's the case, how can you really go further as you are proposing? I think aptly so. But how would you expect what you would like to achieve to pass if this one won't even pass the Senate muster and Biden's muster?
So the key from my perspective, Jimmy, and I think from the perspective of a lot of conservatives in the House, is what numbers do we use as the baseline numbers? Do we use the 2022 number, which is what the Republicans used in this debt ceiling bill? Or do we go back before COVID, before the huge spending in the Trump administration for COVID and in the Biden administration since the Trump administration? And I was advocating for a 2019 number. If we had gotten one more vote against this bill, the leadership would have put on the floor the next day a bill with a 2019 reduced spending. So when you multiply from the 2019 number, you get far less debt created than you do when you start with the 2022 number.
Congressman Ken Buck, our guest. Let's listen to a clip from Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, yesterday, in part talking about an unwillingness by President Biden to negotiate with McCarthy and the Republicans.
Now, the president, I sat down with him on February 1st to find a reasonable, responsible way to raise the debt ceiling. He has ignored for 85 days. So I'm fearful if we get to that moment in time, it's very clear. One side raised the debt ceiling so we wouldn't be in jeopardy, and another side has done nothing. So I don't know. I've encouraged the president to meet. I told him I'd get soft food, whatever it takes. We could sit down. We can meet together. He refuses. So he's putting our economy in jeopardy, and I'm fearful that the American public will be very upset with him if he does it.
What do you make of the fact that Biden is unwilling to negotiate with Republicans, especially when we are talking about the kind of fiscal situation that you laid out? And also, why did Speaker McCarthy and most of your Republican colleagues say, yeah, I mean, maybe Ken Buck has a point, but we're going to pass this anyway?
Well, as to the first point, or first question, Jimmy, I think that Joe Biden recognizes that his spending has been thoroughly irresponsible, that he has. You can't say, give me a clean debt ceiling when and blame it on Republicans if there is a debt crisis, when you've created the debt crisis for decades by the spending that you've been engaged in. So President Biden was in the Senate for 36 years before being vice president for 8 years and now president for 4 years. There's no way he gets to say this isn't on me. It is absolutely on President Biden and the Democrats, the spending that we've engaged in. So his reluctance to acknowledge that fiscal irresponsibility, I think, is part of why he refuses to sit down at the table and agree to some kind of budget caps or other limits. I think Kevin did his best. You know, he had a bill. Four Republicans in Iowa said, no, this is going to hurt ethanol production. He amended the bill. He did what he needed to get to the vote that he needed. If he hadn't gotten those votes, he would have gone to the 2019 number that Andy Biggs and I and I'm not sure about Matt Gaetz, but some others would have preferred, and we would have gotten that bill passed.
Congressman Ken Buck, our guest here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. So this is a clip from, I think, just over a week ago, so it's a little bit old. But I want to ask you about why it's important or valuable to tie the debt ceiling fight to spending, but in part in response to one of your colleagues, Representative Debbie Dingell of Michigan, who said, no, these should be separate issues. Take a listen.
Raising the debt ceiling is a separate discussion from spending. It is making sure that we pay our bills. We did it 3 times during the Trump administration, and both President Trump and President Reagan said you should not play games with raising the debt ceiling, honoring our bills. It hurts us internationally with where we are now. So let me be clear. We need to pay our bills. We need to honor them. And if we were in any way, shape, or form default on our spending, our working men and women across the country would have immediate consequences.
So why tie, Congressman Ken Buck, the debt ceiling fight to spending? Why not just say, hey, let's deal with, because basically it's past spending when it comes to the debt ceiling, right? So why not just get that done and then deal with it solely in the appropriations process when it comes to spending?
Jimmy, every family in America sits down at the kitchen table and looks at their spending, and they understand that spending is tied to debt and is tied to balancing their family budget. We can't deal with debt unless we deal with the spending side of the equation. And if we cap spending, we will have less debt in the future. And that's why you link the two. Yes, it's a crisis if we default on our debt. And you know, there's all kinds of arguments about what that would mean if we default on the debt. But it is certainly a very serious matter. But if you don't anticipate future debt, you're absolutely irresponsible.
So, Congressman Ken Buck, will Republicans keep this going forward during the appropriations process? I mean, I agree with you. This should be something that's dealt with during the debt ceiling discussions and debates. But when we get to the next appropriations bills, when you're talking about the budgeting process, a lot of times it seems like Republicans just sort of roll over and they just say, we'll just go ahead and we'll just do the spending anyway. Will your party, our party, continue to maintain this position post-debt ceiling going into appropriations and really try and hold the line on things like that?
That's a great question. There's no evidence at this point. There hasn't been a single hearing in any committee to look at programs that can be cut or reduced. And that's really, I'm sitting there every day talking to people about why aren't we doing this? How can the chairman not, you know, we are doing all sorts of messaging on immigration, which is important, and on other issues. We had a hearing in foreign affairs on Putin's war crimes, all important things. But at some point, spending is what is going to take this country down. And if we don't look into the federal programs that can be cut and reduced, we are not doing our job.
We're just about out of time with Congressman Ken Buck of the 4th Congressional District. How do you think this thing ends? Do we end up at an impasse and a government shutdown, and will Republicans hold the line there? Or is this going to be another thing where Biden says, no, we don't want to negotiate, we get into a shutdown, he blames Republicans, and, you know, then we have, you know, a political situation that just doesn't get us anywhere and the Republicans end up caving? What do you expect?
Well, this isn't a shutdown. This isn't a budget situation. This is a we don't pay our bills.
Right, absolutely. Default. That's right. Default.
And so we have never defaulted. We have had government shutdowns where we've argued over the budget, but I don't anticipate we will get to the point of actually defaulting. And so what I think happens is Biden is going to refuse to negotiate until we get closer. Obviously, the Senate can pass a bill if they want and send it to the House, which I anticipate Schumer will do. But at some point, they will negotiate, and we'll see whether Kevin gets what he has promised the Republican members if they voted for this bill, which is some type of spending decrease in the future.
Congressman Ken Buck, 4th Congressional District. Anything else real quick that we should be watching in D.C. while we're focused on the debt ceiling? What else is going on there that you can tell us, hey, watch out for this too?
Well, Jimmy, you know, we just dealt with the short-term debt ceiling issue. The long-term is we are going to default. It's not really a question of if, it's a question of when. If we continue the spending that we are engaged in right now, and there's no indication that we won't. We have to start planning for what does it look like when American dollar is not the reserve currency in the world and when America is not the dominant economic power in the world.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fiscal cliff that we have just been getting closer and closer, and at some point we will fall off, and it must be addressed. Appreciate your leadership on this. I hope Republicans hold the line and keep diligently working on these fiscal issues, Congressman Ken Buck, and we appreciate your time on the program this morning.
Thank you, Jimmy. It's good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Once again, Congressman Ken Buck joining us on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. We are going to take a quick break here on the program. When we come back, we'll check in with the guy who's taken over from 9 to noon, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Peter Boyles, will join us here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show as we wrap up and wind down. Again, I'm filling in for George Brockler on Tuesday, May 2nd, and then also the following week on May 8th and May 10th, 6 to 10 in the morning. Keep it right here, the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Oh, yeah. Gotta love a little fun and funky tune from the 70s. It's some blues from the great late Freddie King. one of the three kings of the blues who died way, way before his time, I think in 1974. Good to be with you back on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Real quick little tidbit. There is a principal, Kurt Dennis, at McAuliffe International School, which is middle school. He was the one who sounded the alarm about how the school district was forcing him to keep a student charged with attempted murder in school and then having to go through pat downs. And now he has revealed and has attorney David Lane, First Amendment lawyer, civil rights lawyer, defending him, saying with the district threatening to go after him for exposing that through Nine News and other vehicles. And this is just dastardly. And the lawyer is saying, look, you better not do this or we're going to be going directly to federal court. Well, then you've got the three high school seniors, 18 years old, who were arrested for the terrible crime charged with attempted first degree murder of Alexa. And I mean, with the rock throwing and Jeffco district policy, they will not be returning to the school district. To school, in classroom, for policies that are detrimental to welfare, health, and safety with the threat of physical harm to others. And that happened outside school grounds. DPS said, we can't do this because this was off school grounds. Would they let these kids, if they were Denver students, on school grounds? Peter Boyles, what do you think? This is ridiculous.
Morning, James. How are
you? Good morning.
Here we go. It's... The hidden away school board meetings that now you did a good piece on that.
Thank you.
Bust them out to see what they said.
I know.
I ask you this because you're a young guy. Did you watch Jerry Springer when you were a little kid?
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces.
It was probably still over your head at that time. You were a little guy. But Jerry Springer, of course, now passes away at 79. I don't want to open the show and talk about people. Did you watch Jerry Springer? But more importantly is the Tucker Carlson and I've been just nothing but driven to read this Tucker Carlson story. And Carlson was on board until 2024. They had a long contractual agreement. Mm-hmm. But some of the people that got to see the redacted email in the Dominion court filings, they said you couldn't believe the kinds of things that were being said. And the interesting thing to me was his bosses must have known he was saying these kinds of things, and now all of a sudden everybody's appalled. And for how long was Tucker Carlson really unleashing these text messages that were so bad that Fox News didn't think they could survive now?
Yeah.
But they had them. You know, it's like that great moment network where I go back to it's William Holden and Ned Beatty, and this guy is going crazy, and he's in a wet raincoat, and I'm as mad as hell. And William Holden says to Ned Beatty, you know he's crazy. I'm paraphrasing the film. And it's a Paddy Chayefsky classic. And Ned Beatty says, well, you know, he's got a 28 share. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they allowed all of this to go on. But his contract runs through December 2024. Mm. And I want to talk about this and talk about Springer and then some new breakthroughs on the 28-page suppression and Robert Spencer's on. And then woodpeckers.
Damn things. Damn things.
Woodpeckers attacking my home. And they're protected. Mm. I've had good contact. And Scott Minow and Dave Minow, you remember the guys. And the best show in this city was always Wild Birds. And so Scott's going to join us. And Robert Spencer's coming up. So it's a good show.
All right, Peter, we'll be listening.
Have a
blast. Alexa texting in. I feel like we are on a Jerry Springer show in so many ways. I mean, life.
I have no idea.
Life is that. Now we have cable news. Who needs.
Springer set, he set the table.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
He sure did.
Absolutely.
May he rest in peace. All right. Peter Boyles also filling in for some shows coming up in the next couple weeks for George Brockler. I'll be in for George on Tuesday, May 2nd, and then May 8th and May 10th. So tune in then and tune in next Saturday, same time, same place. For more engaging, intelligent talk, saying style, have a great rest of weekend. And as always, may God bless America.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.